upper edge of the cloud deck slowly. Seconds seemed to stretch into hours. All the while, Bahadur and his two companions were goggle-eyed and stiff with horror, their mouths screaming silently, their hands windmilling with frustration and panic. Then they broke through the clouds. The cursor climbed above the top of the cloud deck into clear space. "They've made it!" I shouted. Fuchs replied sardonically, "Have they?" "They're establishing orbit," I said. "Good," said Fuchs. Bahadur was still wide-eyed, I saw, his chest heaving. But in a few moments he'd realize that he's safe, I thought. Instead, his face turned blood-red. His eyes bulged and then exploded. Blood burst from every pore in his skin. The two others as well.
"Explosive decompression," Fuchs said flatly. "The bugs must have chewed through enough of their hatch seal to weaken it too far to hold the air inside their pod."
With a strangled cry, I snapped off the video imagery.
"Turn off the graph as well," Fuchs said calmly. "It doesn't matter where their pod is now."
I couldn't move my hands. I squeezed my eyes shut, but still the picture of those three people bursting into showers of blood filled my mind.
"Turn it off," Fuchs growled. "Now!"
I did. The screen went blank. Fuchs took a deep breath, ran a hand across his broad jaw.
"They had a chance. Not much of a one, I admit, but they had a chance."
"Yes, they certainly did," I heard myself say. He glared at me.
"You knew it all along. You knew they couldn't make it through the clouds. You sent them to their deaths."
He shot to his feet. I saw his fists clench, and for a moment I thought he was going to haul me out of my chair and beat me senseless. I felt myself cringing inwardly and tried my best not to let it show. Instead, Fuchs stood there for a few undecided moments, then turned and stalked out of the bridge. Before I could say or even think anything else, one of the other crewmen came in and took the con. Conflict. I finished my watch, went off duty and stood on another watch, all without seeing a trace of Fuchs. He was in his quarters the entire time as the ship spiraled lower and lower, deeper into Venus's hot, dense atmosphere. Between watches, I checked on the ship's pumps, which were now manned by the propulsion engineer who had doubled as Sanja's assistant, the Mongol named Nodan. Strong and agile as a young chimpanzee, he was wiry, all bone and tendon, with a wispy black mustache and ornamental spiral scars on both his cheeks that were meant to make him look fierce. But Nodan was at heart a gentle person. It was impossible for me to guess his age. Even though he had probably never been able to afford rejuvenation therapy, he could have been anywhere from 30 to 50, I thought. Unlike the other crewmen, he spoke English rather well and didn't hesitate to converse with me. He had been born in the asteroid belt, the son of miners who had fled their home in Mongolia when the Gobi Desert engulfed the grasslands on which the tribes had lived since time immemorial. He had never been to Earth, never set foot on the mother world. We were in the main pump station, one level below the bridge and captain's quarters. Kneeling on the metal mesh deck plates, I could feel the throb of the engines, separated from the pump bay by nothing more than a thin partition. Nodan was explaining how the pumps could be powered by hot sulfur dioxide from the heat exchangers.
"It saves electrical power for those systems that cannot run on heat," Nodan was saying,
patting the round metal pump housing as if it were a faithful hound. "But the nuclear generator provides plenty of electricity, doesn't it?" I asked. He nodded and smiled cheerfully.
"Yes, true. But when the world outside gives us so much free energy, why not accept a gift? After all, we are guests in this world. We should be grateful for anything it offers to us."
A different attitude, I thought. I began to ask him more about the pumps when a shadow fell over Nodan's face. Literally. His smile vanished. I turned and saw the captain standing behind us.
"Learning the pumps, eh? Good."
I couldn't say that he looked cheerful. Fuchs never seemed to show good humor. But he wasn't glaring or angry. My little outburst up on the bridge the day before had apparently been forgotten. Or more likely, I thought, tucked away in memory for later retrieval. Nodan and I both scrambled to our feet. Fuchs clasped his hands behind his back and said to me,
When you're finished here, Humphreys, report to the observation center. We have several radar images to check on.
Yes, sir, I said.
Teach him well, Nordan, he said to the youth. Once he learns the pumps, I can bring you up to the bridge.
Yes, sir, Captain, Nordan said, beaming.
I grew weary of Nordan's explanations long before he did. He seemed truly to be in love with the pumps, their importance to the ship's performance, their intricacies, their nuances, every weld and part and vibration of them. I thought I could learn just as much from the computer's files on the pumps, but I patiently endured Nodon's smiling, eager dissertation for seemingly endless hours. At last I excused myself and went up the ladder to the main deck. The observation center was up in the nose, but there was something else that I wanted to do first. I went down the passageway to the sick bay. It was empty, so I walked down to Marguerite's door and tapped at it. No reply. I rapped harder.
"Who is it?"
came her muffled voice.
"Van."
No response for several moments. Then the door cracked open.
"I was sleeping," she said.
"May I come in? Just for a couple of seconds."
She slid the folding door open all the way, and I stepped into her quarters. The bed was rumpled, but otherwise the compartment looked neat and orderly. Marguerite had pulled on a pair of wrinkled, faded coveralls. I realized that my own were not all that clean and sweet.
"What do you want, Van?"
she asked tightly.
It was the first time we'd been alone in a while. She looked tired, hair tousled, her eyes puffy from sleep, but still very beautiful. The lines of her cheek and jaw would have inspired any sculptor, I thought.
"Well?"
"I'm sorry I disturbed you," I began.
"That's all right," she said a little more lightly. "I had to get up anyway. Someone was pounding at my door."
My brows knit with confusion. "But I was..." "Oh, I see. It's a joke."
"Yes,"
she said, smiling a little.
"A joke."
"I wanted to ask if you were able to get my medical records from Truax." She nodded and gestured toward the laptop computer sitting open on the compartment's desk.
"Yes, no problem."
"And?"
"And what?"
"Can you synthesize the enzyme for me?" Marguerite sighed wearily.
"Not yet. Probably not at all."
"Why not?" I demanded. Frowning, she asked,
"How much biochemistry do you understand?"
Searching.
"It's about time you got here," Fuchs said to me when I arrived at the observation center up in the ship's nose.
"Sorry to be late, sir," I apologized.
"I had to stop it. When I give an order, I expect it to be obeyed at once, Humphreys, without any delays. Understand me?"
"Yes, sir." It was just as cramped as ever in the observation center, with all the sensors crammed into the compartment. With Fuchs in there, it seemed crowded to the point of bursting. Lucifer's nose tapered to a rounded point, glassed in with thick quartz ports that could be shuttered when necessary. They were unshielded now, and I could see the seething barren surface of Venus far below us. Fuchs stood in the midst of all the instruments and computers like a heavy dark thundercloud, hands clasped behind his back, eyes taking in the unending panorama of devastation below.
"She looks so beautiful from a distance," he muttered, "and so desolate up close. Like quite a few women I've known."
From Fuchs that was an unexpected burst of humor.
"You knew Marguerite's mother, didn't you?" I asked.
He looked at me and huffed. "A gentleman doesn't discuss his women, Humphreys." That ended that line of conversation.
Gesturing to the bleak, rocky landscape below, Fuchs said,
"Radars picked up several returns that are apparently metallic. We've got to decide which one is your brother's wreckage."
There were no chairs in the observation center, no room for them. The sensors were mounted in the bulkhead and decking. Their computers lined a shelf that stood at shoulder height, so we remained standing as we reviewed the computer files of the various radar images. Most of them were little more than glints, either random artifacts in the programming or natural projections of rock that gave sharp radar reflections similar to bare metal. But wherever there were mountains, I saw strong radar reflections indicating metal, starting at roughly 9,000 meters. It reminded me of snow caps on the mountains of Earth. Below that 9,000-meter line